We are so fucked.
Nailed it.
Absolutely. Okay.
Why don't you start a new Twitter space? So we
Okay, Rec Radio, episode 38. I'm just going to start this Twitter space now. Welcome to Rec Radio, everyone on YouTube. All right, you guys.
We've been rugged multiple times here. Rugged multiple times. K Money has not shown up, and the Twitter Spaces link has broken. So OSF is going to have to create a new Twitter Spaces link, and we've just got to hope at some stage that K Money turns up. If not, it's going to just going to be a Q&A with OSF and myself. We're just going to get people on stage, talk about trading a little bit. Maybe have a lot of audience questions, what we're doing at the moment, and how we're navigating the markets right now. But yeah, we'll see what happens. Maybe KBM wakes up. He did say he was going to have to wake up for the show, and then we've tried to call him a couple of times, hasn't answered. So maybe that turns. How are you doing with the Twitter space?
All right, new Twitter space is up. If you guys want to... Oh, shit, hang on. Okay, new Twitter space is up. Sorry, guys, the last Twitter space arrived. Welcome to everyone joining on Twitter. So, yeah, for people who are tuning into the space, basically, we can't get a hold of K-Money, so, and his phone's off, I think. So if he wakes up at some point during the show, we'll have him on. But otherwise, we're just going to improvise and kind of just fuck around. I'll start off by introducing the sponsor, shall I? Try and kill some time that way.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to kill time, but yes, we should probably introduce the sponsor.
just say it really slowly. So, as you guys know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit, one of the largest crypto casinos out there. You can do everything from crypto futures trading, casino games, sports betting, NFT, borrowing, lending, trading, all that degen stuff you can do on rollbit.com or rollbot.com, depending on your jurisdiction. As usual, we've got two codes to give away. So the first code is KMoneyNFT732. KMoneyNFT732. And that code is also on the YouTube. If you guys want to watch this show live and video, check out the pinned tweet in the space. If you guys want to participate in the loot box bin later in the show, make sure you retweet the pinned tweet on the Rec Radio Twitter account. But I'll give you guys a reminder a bit of time before we do that the next time. All right, that's the sponsor sorted.
How you doing? This is what we normally say. So you've been we obviously got absolutely destroyed on that. Well, crypto got absolutely destroyed on that move lower.
What do you think that move was? I still haven't read a single thing where it's like, oh yeah, that's what it is.
The conspiracy theories are out, right? It's either BlackRock dumping on us, or it's fucking CZ dumping on us, and I don't know. Crypto's just full of this shit, and every so often it's right, but I don't know, more than 50% of the time it's just absolute bullshit, and it's probably just one person who sold and to puke.
See, the CZ stuff does make sense. I do see why they would have to do that and why they would be doing it, but I don't know, it just feels far-fetched, doesn't it? It feels very far-fetched to be true.
Who the fuck's giving him that loan? Which financial institution is giving him hundreds of million dollars of? I mean, I just don't see it happening. I just don't see it happening. So I don't know. I don't believe. I think he's probably in shit.
Old Sunny Boy.
Sunny Boy.
Giving him a big loan. Could be that.
Maybe Justin Sun's giving him a big loan. I don't know. It feels like they've had some disagreements as well over the last few months. So,
well, you got a question here, Amanda. You still bullish for H2 with market pullbacks and your sentiment shifting a bit out to 24?
Yeah, it's difficult because I think macro is still set up for a good end of the year, in my opinion. I don't think we're going to see a recession. I think it's all getting overblown. I think there's some bad spots, but I just don't think it's going to be that bad. Even in housing, which most people get scared about. For crypto, I don't know. It just feels like such a manipulated market. I don't know about that's what it's felt like to me for the last 9 months. What I think is going to happen and what has happened like with the news that's come out has been completely the opposite. So I've been very, very surprised at it. I think that we got in about 2 months ago, we started saying, look, we're going to start increasing our risk, didn't we? Right. We were like, all right, we're going to start moving into a few higher beta plays because we think it's going to be, you don't want to miss them. The market's probably dumped 10-20% since then. We started moving into them probably about 18-50 on ETH. So most of those are probably underwater by like, I don't know, 20-30%, it feels like right now. But I do think that those are all, you know, I still think you want to be putting your money into like 10x trades. I don't think crypto is going to shit the bed. I think the only thing it tells me is going to shit the bed is some chartist who says it has to hit the level. So I don't see anything fundamentally that means crypto is going to shit the bed. I like the move to on-chain. I think that's quite a big thing. Yeah, I think stablecoins are going low. The amount of stablecoins is going lower, but I do think a lot more ETH is moving and Bitcoin is moving on-chain. So catching some of those trades, I think, is these like 10x altcoin, shitcoin, whatever you want to call it, on-chain trades, I think is a good spot to be in. But I do think, yeah, I would agree that it seems unlikely to me that ETH ends the year at like 2,500 now. It feels like it's quite a big way to go now. So that feels like more like a 2024 move for me. But
I think when we were looking at it and speaking about it, you know, maybe this was about a month ago, and we were feeling quite bullish. I think when you feel bullish on something, like, you always know there's always some probability that you're wrong, right? And everything had lined up at that point in time. Like, macro looked really good. You had the ETF stuff. You had positive SEC Ripple stuff. Like, it all just was like on a plate with a quite high probability of working out. And at the moment, a month on, it hasn't. That doesn't mean it couldn't a month from now or 2 months from now. Or I still think we could get to 2,500 ETH by the end of the year. But when you have so many things lining up like that, I think you still, I wouldn't change my decision, right? I wouldn't change my trade, because you have to, if you get one of these moves, or you catch one of these things and you get it right, and you know, if you're buying altcoins or other high beta stuff, you're looking at, buying ETH on leverage, you're looking at like 10x, 10, 20x trades here. And so even if I went back in time, you know, that sometimes I make a decision and I was like, that was a bad decision. If I was in that position again, I would make a different decision. But in this case, if I was in that position again, I would make the same decision, because like, look, we're down 20%, but the upside could have been up 20x, right? Those are odds you always want to play, I think. And I don't know, I still think, for me, I feel more comfortable when people are doubting those moves, because that's when I think it's more likely to actually happen. You don't want it to be too much of a consensus view, because then it just kind of never happens. That's what it felt like then. Everyone just got all bullish at the same time, and then we just kind of faded, and then, you know, we had that dump. So I don't know. I'm still bullish, to be honest with you. And whether it's this year, whether it's 2024, I don't know. But I think this now is the time you want to be constructing a portfolio for that big bull run. I think you want to be doing that now, so you don't have to do it in 6 months' time and buy at much higher prices.
Somebody just asked in the chat, like, what do you think brings back retail to crypto now?
Frentech.
I know, like, I just don't understand it. What's your view on this thing? Like, everyone's just fucking hating on it, and I get that it's a Ponzi. I get that it's a bonding curve. It has like a few red flags, but I think it, like, you look at, if that does take off, it could be big, right? It does have the ability to be very, very big if it's successful. And like, they have to tweak it. Like, obviously paying 10% in, 10% out on shares is fucking high. The bonding curve probably doesn't have to be as aggressive. I think that it will quickly become obvious that the most successful ones tie some sort of outside revenue stream to their chats, or they, like, I don't know, they actually give you real access to the person. But it doesn't seem terrible. It just feels like everyone's just banded up against it. And it's like, oh, you know, this is just a Ponzi. This is just shit. Like, this won't last. What do you think?
I think Frentech makes a lot of sense in like our community, because I think people like doing some things in this world. One of them is like degen gambling, speculating, making ETH, and having like this element of clout or like, you know, wannabe online celebrity kind of factor kind of thing. Like people care about that too. So this combines all those things in a really simple fashion. It's just literally some shitty app where you can like buy and sell keys and people in ETH, and it just works. And, you know, compared to BitCloud, like this is all on ETH. You can actually make real ETH. I know it's on Base, but you can bridge, you know, back and forth. So that I think all makes sense. That it works within the space. Is that going to onboard more people into the space? I don't know. Like, if I ask someone on the street or a normie, like, would you care about like being able to buy shares in me or someone else or whatever? And I think most people would probably say not really.
Maybe not you, but if you could buy one in like, I don't know, like a proper celebrity, not like a minor internet celebrity, you know?
It's not real. You're not getting, they're not real shares, right? Like, say you can buy Taylor Swift, for example. It's just like, I'm buying
Taylor Swift. Yeah, of course it's not real shares.
Yeah.
I hope it's not real shares. I don't want to own part of this. Like, that's bad. It's got to be like, you have, that's what I mean. It has to be related to utility.
I guess it's good if you're like, if you're like, this artist is going to become huge, or this like youth football player is going to become huge, and you get in really early and then become huge, then you can like, that's definitely a play.
Like, imagine, I don't know, this is different for everyone, but imagine if your like childhood sports star was on this app. You probably would try and buy a share, right? So you could just be in a conversation. Like, the biggest rooms are in the hundreds, maybe, before they become out of like reach for most people. Let's say you got 150 people in a chat room. Like, that's not a terrible, would you pay a grand to be in a chat room with 60 other people with one of your idols? I actually think you might.
Yeah, but you just know it's not going to be these people, right? Like, you're not, against like the Soldier Boy chat, it's not actually Soldier Boy in the chat, right? It's just someone else managing.
Yeah, that's true. Look, that's 100% true.
But maybe there are enough simps out there who just think it's real.
I'd simp. If Didier Drogba was anywhere in the world, I'd pay to be in. Yeah, Didier Drogba, childhood sports star, growing up. Who was your like growing up idol that you'd pay to be in a chat with? You're a Beckham fan? Would you
put one? Yeah, big David Beckham fan. David Beckham definitely up there.
Ronaldo.
I don't really like Ronaldo. I've sort of the last couple of years. Ronaldo, not so much.
I think it needs adoption, basically. But I do think it could go big. But the other stuff I think is slower burners. Like, it does feel those narratives are going to take longer. But ETFs could lead to more real-world assets being moving on chain, and I don't know, gambling is going to be massive. Robit's going to be fucking massive. So I feel like that sort of stuff is all moving on chain in a good way. Gaming could be a big.
What about this question? What is your crypto basket distribution in percentage?
As in, like, versus other shit?
Yeah, I guess maybe just like a percentage weighting of just everything.
High. It's fucking high. I would say, right? I have quite a lot in stables, but I also have quite a lot just in ETH. Like, the vast, vast majority I think I did it like a while back, right? It hasn't really changed much since then. I think I actually gave like a breakdown. It's mainly Bitcoin and ETH, and then stables. So it's all like on chain. I don't have really that much real estate. I have this place that I'm currently in, but you don't really have any real estate.
By the way, we've just been reading questions off the YouTube. People are asking questions in the YouTube channel. So if you have more questions, just ask them on the YouTube channel. Or if you want to come up and ask a question on the space, then just request and we'll bring you up, and you can also ask a question as well. We can do it that way as well. So it could be any question. It could be like about how to trade, how to take risks, how to gamble, like weird, like kinky questions from Mando, like pretty much anything. We'll answer everything.
just offering me up. I think you were kind of boring as a personal investor until you got into crypto, but I've always kind of been on a bit more degen. But I think if you're any age under 35, maybe 40, like, you're just doing yourself a disservice by just not being a fucking degen. It's like, if you're saving up in fucking bond portfolios or savings accounts or pensions, it's like, what are you doing? Like, you need to be taking a lot of risk, in my opinion. So I always bought fully into that. I go quite big into small positions, I would say. Like, I don't have that many different things I own, but just ones that I really like, I'm very big in. And then when I stop liking them as much, I'll get out of them. And that's the case for a lot of different things. But I'll generally just focus on one or two things. Very high degen. And I think there's a time and place for that. You kind of, in your life, where you probably start to limit that. But you just got one life, man. You just got to fucking go for it. And yeah, that's kind of always been my view. Also, like, I just think that if you have the right work ethic, you should just always look at stuff like, what is your yearly salary, or what you can make if you, like, you really fucking work hard, and you'll always be able to make back, I think. So just always be max degen. But you weren't really like that until, I guess, we had a very degenerate job. Like, you were very taking a lot of risks, so sometimes that encourages you not to take risk in your personal life. But it does, yeah, give you to maximize your, like, you're able to, like, do whatever the hell you like now, right?
I think just one day you have an awakening and you're just like, I'm gonna go for it. All right, so what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go through some of these questions on the YouTube, and I'll go to Burn, and then I'll go to J6 who are on the spaces. Do you ever degen on slots, OSF? Someone asked. I do not degen on slots. I actually don't really play any casino games because I like to do things where I feel like I have an edge in. I just don't feel like I have an edge in casino games. So, yeah, not for me.
You do some sports betting.
I do some sports betting, but that's to make the sports game I'm watching more interesting. Or it's like, if I bet on Manu, it's just like double up on the emotions, because I think that's quite fun. But yeah, that's kind of it. I think this is a good question. How to control greed? How do you control greed, Mando?
Oh, that's a very good question.
Yeah.
I think Rookie came on our show recently and was like, always be counter-trading the timeline. I now realize that, and actually I think Alex Weiss came on and said something very similar, like, just if you're trying to do trades to, I don't know, like almost like chauvinistically be like, oh, I'm 1,000x in this, or like, I want to go limit up, or like, it's very quickly to get caught up in crypto, both down and up. Like, if you're following the timeline, I literally saw crypto break, I think, what was it? Bitcoin broke 27K. And somebody on my timeline said it's going to 12K. I was like, how could you just believe that straight away? Like, it's so easy to read a tweet like that and just be like, oh my God, like, everything's going lower. And we know this because we're in chats, I think, with multiple people who you know, just read the timeline. It can be fucking horrific on the way down and horrific on the way up. So I think I've become better at noticing when the timeline just feels like it's just one way. And that's when I tend to reduce greed. You can set targets in your mind, I think, like, when you would get out of levels, and they can feel pretty horrific when you do get out of them, because it might do another like 5-10x. So I think layering out of trades also helps. But one thing I've noticed with, like, I would say over 70% of traders here, they get in and out kind of in one go. So they'll be like, right, I'm going to go all in here, and then I'm going to get all out. I'm going to go all in to ETH, or all in to, I'll put on 1,000x in one trade. I think it's better to break that down into like 4 or 5 trades, and then consider getting in and out that way. It might help you mentally to get in and out that way, I think.
I would say my answer to it is, before you enter a trade, have a level in your mind, or maybe even write it down, where you're going to take profits. It doesn't have to be the whole thing. You can be DCAing out of your profits, like I'd sell 10% here, 20% here, et cetera, et cetera. But once you write down levels, I think it takes away the emotion out of your trade, because then it's like, oh, this is up 20%. Now I'm going to sell 10%. Then you're not, when it, then you're not like, oh, it's up 20%. Like, should I buy more? Should I do this? Should I do that? I think these feelings of emotion and greed and fear, et cetera, they come into play when you don't really have a structured game plan. And then your mind takes over in a state where it's not supposed to be making like these big decisions. So you should be making these big decisions when you're in a calm state before you even enter the trade, before there's even any money involved, because that's when you're going to be able to think about it in the most efficient and effective way for yourself. And then when the levels hit, then you buy, then you sell, you know exactly what you're doing. You're not trying to think in the moment, oh my God, what should I do? This is up 50% or down 50%. So that would be my advice, and not only how to tackle greed, but also how to tackle fear as well when it goes the other way. All right, Bern, thanks for joining. Do you have a question?
Yeah, so originally I just requested in the event you guys were doing a drawing so I could win the drawing, but I'm up on stage, so so first thing, digital identity. So last year everyone was talking about digital identity and how bullish they were on it. How a lot of these PFP collections are going to be worth so much. And what we're seeing now is a lot of the quote-unquote blue chips just taking an absolute shit. So I guess my question to you guys is, how do you feel about digital identity and the future of that valuation as it comes to PFP?
I think it's really important, but you have to also assess the value that's assigned to each thing. Like this concept, everyone may want to have a PFP or a metaverse avatar, etc. I think is true. I think it will happen. This idea that people might want luxury things is true. It will happen. But what's happened is like that whole metaverse and etc. stuff didn't take off as quickly as people were thinking it did. And you also had an influx of like loads of different PFPs. So I think for the best things out there, like punks or maybe even like rare art or stuff which people feel like are digital artifacts, that theory still holds, but it's real tough if you just XYZ animal PFP right now because there's so many of them.
Yeah, I think digital identity is a big trend. I do. I think it's clear that people spend most of their time online. It's clear that most people have profile pictures on all these apps, and like the issue is that they're beveling goods in that they look more attractive as they go higher, and then conversely, they look a lot less attractive as they go lower. So, for example, like if you take a Bored Ape was, I don't know if it was ever like super cool because there's always had haters, but it was definitely like iconic at a certain level. And then as it's gone lower, as with a lot of these profile pictures, they suddenly look, everyone's like, oh, the art doesn't look as good, or like that. That's just like human nature with these things because they're seen as luxury goods. So the fact that they're tied to a floor price is a little bit tough. It helps you on the way up, but like if your Ferrari, let's say Ferrari didn't have like a standard price in RRP for its cars, and it went up all the way, did a 4x on a standard Ferrari, and then when they started costing like 25% of a standard Ferrari, suddenly people would be like, oh, they don't look so good, or like it's the same with all these veveling goods. So I think this will come back, but you just have to pick the ones that are, you think could go back up at the next cycle of money coming back into this space. And I think some of the stuff will stay iconic, like particularly the ones that grasp the culture, even throughout the bear market, or they've grasped like a community, a strong community even through these bear markets, that will become cool again. You know, in 2, 3, 4 years, I can imagine a lot of them being like, oh, you have one of those. That's quite a cool community. They're still doing stuff. Yeah, actually, like they're kind of iconic. With all these crazes, you see them like the epic run up, and then it crashes. Like Pokemon cards, epic run up, then it crashed, and then when everyone stopped playing the game, and then they've kind of stayed iconic. So like people started to come back, and they went from being cool to uncool to kind of just like low key cool forever now. And I think that's kind of what you're looking for with some of these NFTs.
Right. Next
that
question.
Makes sense. Oh. Okay. So wrecked guy. Got it. Yeah. Oh, Farrah, just a follow-up question. do you think having utility tied to those PFPs hurts them or helps them? That's my last question.
I think it helps them if the utility is actually something that people want. I think it hurts them when the perceived utility gets hyped up aggressively by founders before they deliver anything, and then they end up delivering something that's substandard. So when you get some good utility, like I own some shit, like I own this Evinco NFT where I get like 3 bottles of wine every month, and that's good utility for me because I like it. I own like a LinkStyle NFT, which gives me like tons of discounts from various golf courses or golf shit that I want to buy. Like, that's good utility. I like it. But those aren't the things that cause floor prices to go higher or lower, right? Floor prices go higher when someone's like, oh my God, we've got this like big announcement to make that's going to be game changing piece of utility. And, you know, we're ready to launch this, whatever it is. And then they launch it and it's just like a fucking art upgrade or something. But in that time being, you pumped your floor price and made royalties. So I'm just saying, like, the answer to your question is, I think it just depends on what the utility is and how it's communicated. But as it stands, I think utility has hurt most of these projects. The projects that are doing well right now are those that don't have utility or haven't promised any utility. All right, thanks, Ben. All right, I'm going to go back to YouTube here for some questions. Mando, do you regret committing to a butt tattoo at 4.2 floor price for Rek Guy? I think you're muted, by the way. You're muted, Michael.
No, not at all. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Why would I? It's like an iconic move. I kind of wish I'd done it slightly lower in terms of ETH price. Part of me kind of wants it to happen now. 4.2 ETH might take a little bit of time, I think, through a bear market, but it's gonna be an iconic event. I might do it live at a Rek show as well. I was thinking
live art tattoo at a Rek show. It would be.
Can you imagine that?
It would be something amazing. All right, here's a good question. The common.
Can I do the tattoo? Can I do the ink?
Yes.
Jesus Christ! Can you imagine that on stage?
All right, this is a good question. The common thing right now is to hold with the market how it is now. Would you deem now as a good time to buy or just hold the bags already filled? So I guess this person is saying, like, most people are advocating just holding your risk right now. But is it a good time to buy or do you just keep holding?
One thing I think that has changed from even the last few months is that liquidity has gone down a lot. Like, the volumes have gone down a lot. The number of market makers has gone down a lot. A lot of money has moved off exchanges. So you're seeing more violent moves. So I think there will be a good time to have some liquidity in this market. It's something that there's always a good time to have liquidity. Like, this something I've always realized is that although I'm always max degen, I'll always keep some money in stables because there'll always be a point. Think about that over the last like 10 years. There's always a point, right? COVID, fucking debt crisis, fucking, I don't know, there's like 3 or 4 where there's just that point where everything just feels like it's going to be a disaster. So I do think there's always keep a bag ready to just like buy a dip because it's you can make your whole year doing that sort of stuff. But we've definitely deployed a lot because we think that we didn't want to miss what we thought was going to be a rally over the next 12 months. So I think if you don't have anything, have a bit, but buy a bit now, and then I would wait because I do think Bitcoin could wick down to like 20K in this market. It really, really could. So I would be prepared for big moves as well.
Is it scary to take money out of your portfolio for monthly living expenses? Or do you have income outside of crypto to cover them?
I guess if I was all in on crypto a few years ago, I would have had to take money out. But we have like businesses. That's the other thing. Like, alongside the concept of I think you should be kind of towards your more degenerate end in your portfolio, is I'm also like a big believer in backing yourself with your ideas, your concepts. I know everyone, lots of people have like normal jobs, but like $1,000 invested in yourself, you could theoretically turn that into millions. Like just a concept, like I don't even know how to describe it. We do a podcast. Recently I've been doing a daily newsletter, like just small ideas that you can invest in with your own time. You can turn those into millions, which is way more than any trading can get you, unless you catch like a shitter at like pre 1000x, which doesn't really happen, or like it's rare. The best thing you're going to be able to do to get parabolically wealthy is to have your own ideas and concepts and invest in them. If you are not doing that and you're just like have a regular 9-to-5 job, then I think you've got to be max degen, because the only way that you're going to become super wealthy is by being degenerate. That's what people never tell you, but like they're always like, oh, hard work. You'll watch these YouTube videos about like motivation. It's like, oh, get up, you know, work really hard. No, hard work does not get you wealthy. Hard work only gets you wealthy if you take massive risks alongside of it. Like the world is becoming even more unequal with time. The rich are getting richer. They're pulling away from everyone else and they're getting richer and richer and richer. You need to take, if you're not wealthy, you need to take increasingly high risks to get there. And that's either with you doing your own business and going for it, or you need to consider that in your own portfolio.
This is a good follow-up question that leads on nicely from that, I think. What advice would you give to people who don't have great amounts of money to start?
I think either of those two things of what I just described. Like if you don't have a lot of money, then maybe the best thing for you to do is think of a concept and work really hard and try and grow that into a business or something that you can sell, or like try and build up a stack. Like coming to this space with no money and hoping to get 1000x on a shitter, like that can be, it can be brain damage. It can be brain damage. So maybe if you have like very, very little, I think the thing is to think of your own business concepts or stuff like that. That's what I would say.
Like someone asked that question on YouTube and someone responded with leverage, baby.
You can, but like, if you have no money, I don't want to be telling people they're like going to lose all their money. Like that seems aggressive. Like if you're living on like the poverty line, I think you should be reconsidering like what you're necessarily adding in value to, like, I don't know, how you can increase your value. So that would probably be like thinking of your own business concepts and how you can maximize returns from that, rather than like, I don't know, putting your actual like food or like shelter at jeopardy.
I think even if, like, let's say you should think about it in percentage terms. So I think people get carried away with like, oh, this guy put 10 grand in something, or this guy put 20 grand in something, this guy put 1 grand in something. Like, you just think about what you can afford to invest or trade or degen with as a percentage of what you earn or a percentage of what you have. And maybe that number is 10%, 20%, 30%, I don't know. But that percentage shouldn't be something that like wipes you out if it goes to zero. Do you know what I mean? Like, you should be able to put, I don't know, let's just for the sake of example, you should be able to put in like 20% of your monthly income into like investing in stuff or trading stuff. And if that goes to zero every single time each month at the end of the year, you may have lost like 20% of your annual income, but you're not like unable to pay rent or having to like leave your home or whatever and all that kind of stuff. So that 20% may be as low as like $50. It might be a grand. I don't know what the number is. Everyone earns different amounts of money, right? But you know, if you put in $50 in the space, there are like so many people out there who are making like 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50x your money. And that will give you a bigger stack to then invest in the next one. Like, let's say you 10x your $50. Now you've got $500. You know, lock away $250 of that, but now you've got $250 to play with. You've got even more money to start. And that's how you build up from there. And, you know, like when you have small amounts of money, what you'll find is it's probably like easier to find some of these trades with higher risk. You know, like there's a lot of like shit coins and stuff out there. I mean, maybe NFTs once upon a time, maybe not right now. Maybe some of the other stuff, but you can like, you have the liquidity to like buy something and sell something as much as you want pretty quickly without impacting the market. You know, when you start buying 100K of a shitcoin and you want to sell it, it's very tough to do it without like ruining the charts, right? So you kind of have an advantage in being small in the space because it allows you to be nimble. So use that to your advantage and just, you know, figure out what that percentage is that you can afford to put into this stuff and that's not going to wipe you out, and just do it. I think that would be my response to that. Should we do the final question? How do you avoid not getting wrecked? How do you avoid getting wrecked? Not double negative there. How do you get wrecked?
Yeah, look, I never really loved this question because I think you should be getting wrecked. I don't know how to describe it, but I think getting wrecked implies that you're taking shots, like you are going for it. And I've been wrecked a few times, and I think it also implies somebody who's taking shots with their life, taking risks. A boring life is somebody who never gets wrecked and never takes risks. So I think don't be afraid of it, go for it. Obviously, as Obi says, like, don't be like left on the like on the streets if it doesn't go right for you. But I do think you should really be, people should be taking way more risks with themselves. Hard work is just not going to be the only thing that gets you there. Like watching some motivational video on YouTube is not going to be the thing that gets you there. Watching some Andrew Tate video isn't going to be the thing that gets you there. You need to take risks alongside hard work for it to work.
I'm going to ask one more question because I think this is a good question. That someone's asked, what is your preferred net worth for retirement? Be honest. So at what net worth would you retire?
Is that for me or for you?
I'm just asking you these questions.
There's a famous like Harvard study which says that you ask a millionaire how much they would retire at, they say 2 million. 2 million, they say 4 million. 4 million, they say 8 million. 8 million, they say 16 million. They always double it. They always double it. You ask a guy with 100 million how much he'll retire at, he'll probably say 200 million. Like, double is where they always want to get to. I my life is the best it's ever been. I'm not doing this for that. So I just think it's like mentally you always want to push yourself. But what would you do if you retired? Like, I'm fucking 31 years old. What are you going to do? I know you do. Just play golf the whole time. So I just think you don't do this for a number, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think like even when we had Alex Weiss on a few weeks ago and he was up like 600 mil or whatever, which is just like a complete fuck off amount of money, and he just kept going and lost it all just so he could do it all over again. Like, I think it gets to a point. I think if you're in this game, you're in it for the money, but you're not in it because you are necessarily wanting to use that money to spend on things the whole time and like achieve a better lifestyle. I think you're in it because it's like a computer game. Like, how many points can you get? Like, how far can you keep pushing it? And can you get back to it once it goes down? But I would agree with Manda. Like, I don't really have an answer to that because I don't think I'll ever retire. I don't think there's any aspect of anything that I'm doing right now that I don't enjoy that I would do if I had 100 million more dollars. So, yeah, just keep going.